Look, I think what you're going to need is some zombie takeout. I can give you the name of some professionals that can help you out. Hello, and welcome to episode 422 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Movie and Cult Movie Show. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got quite a bit of listener submitted. A couple from the directors of the films we reviewed last week. Drew McDonald, writer-director of Here There Be Monsters, emailed us back. When I put up last week's episode, I replied to the emails that we received, letting them all know that the episode was up.
Cool.
Drew McDonald of Here There Be Monsters replied saying, "Thanks so much for the review and all the kind words. Really glad you enjoyed the film, and I sent it to Savannah, our actress, and she was stoked that you guys gave her such praise too."
I'm sorry. She had to listen to two guys.
Probably, I would presume, just, you know, her film. You know, maybe not the entire episode.
Yeah.
Joe Badon, writer-director of Sister Tempest, replied saying, "Amazing, this is fantastic, I'm sharing now, thank you so much." The person who emailed us about Sweet Revenge also replied, but they just said, "Thanks, have a great day." So I'm guessing they replied before, you know, they had listened to the episode. Also, I'm not sure about Drew McDonald because I couldn't find any current socials for him or the movie. But Joe Badon was sharing it all over the place.
Cool.
Quite a bit. I ended up following all the socials for him and Sister Tempest. And we, as of last night, hit 42 downloads on that episode, which is quite a bit ahead of in our usual. So thank you, Joe. We also got some feedback from Bodo on Twitter. I did happen to finally watch Sister Tempest. I agree with you guys. Definitely a combination of Monty Python meets Doctor Who meets the 70s. Anne Hutchinson kept sticking in my brain, but I couldn't remember why until must have been something from college, and then he posted a screenshot of the Wikipedia article about the Puritan who you mentioned last time.
Yeah.
Before we get to Bodo's second bit of feedback, I posted a voicemail from him on our socials. It was a bit too long to fit into the episode, and it was about Labyrinth, which we reviewed like a month ago, so I didn't want to...
No, it was Lady Hawk.
Sorry, Lady Hawk, which was like a month ago. So yeah. I didn't want to crowbar it in here. It's on our socials. Please check it out. It's very funny.
It's he's come up with the ultimate Matthew Broderick movie, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It just ties everything together.
It was incredibly thorough. Thank you, Bodo. he also, in reference to this week's movie, said, "Fed Milo, the beginning confused me. I thought I was watching Men in Black, the music anyway." And then he said, "Bed Milo should have been made 30 years before it was. Combination of critters and gremlins. No horror, no comedy. Love story? Two brains."
One of my titles was Ghoulies Gonna Sue.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it was, you know, practically the same creature, I think, almost.
Yeah, it looked very similar, yeah.
Yeah.
And on to this week's movie, which is from 2013, Bed Milo. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Stress. When fighting monsters, beware that you do not create one.
And also brought to you by Dr. Highsmith. He's a Dr. Witch. Who will help you? All right. So we have this this poor guy. He's just going through it right now. His job is just an absolute mess. He's having some stomach troubles, to say the least.
Mm.
And he's told, of course, he can't, he has to ease up on the stress somehow. And so, of course, I'm like, oh, another terrible movie to watch during these times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this and The Lighthouse would be like the ultimate movies you shouldn't watch during. But anyway, his problems come to a hit, and he's got to go see a doctor about him, and about his stomach issues, and of course he also gets recommended to a shrink.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
the doctor finds
a scanner. Yeah, the doctor finds a weird shaped polyp, so he's got to get in to scan even more. And he recommends to go to a shrink because, of course, stress is just not his friend either. His job, what happens at his job, of course, he's working for a financial services company, oddly unnamed in the whole thing too. No office thing or anything like that. No, bill at the doorway or anything. He's been taken from an accounts manager to HR, and he has to fire people, which is pretty much like an episode of Cheers, actually, where Norm Peterson went from an accountant to the HR guy because he was such a friendly guy and everybody liked him that
It's a sitcom trope.
they thought, I don't know how many times that's happened,
I've
actually.
seen it a number of times where the really nice, protagonist is taken from their comfortable job and forced to fire people.
I really thought that was a Cheers, like,
Well,
I
it might have
don't know,
started with Cheers, but
maybe.
it has been used in other sitcoms.
And then, of course, the gag in Cheers was that when Norm wanted to get out of doing it, he went to talk to his boss about it, and his boss thought he was gonna get fired, so no one would return his calls. So he got to get out of doing anything because nobody wanted to talk to him at all.
Right.
Everybody started avoiding him. But here, poor Duncan. He's stuck in like a converted men's room, which, I mean, of course, that's an office space kind of thing.
Okay, you were thinking office space. I went to Brazil.
Oh yeah, Brazil too, wasn't it? I mean, office space was a basement,
Right.
which, of course, with Steven Root in the movie, you're thinking
Yeah.
office space
Yeah.
all the way. So, and yeah, he's stuck in the men's room with this other kind of incompetent guy who somehow gets into his system too. I don't understand how that worked. But then they put those problems on hold. They kind of circle around a little bit. You see his mom is married to a much younger man, and his mom is pressuring him to have kids. And so much so that she hired a fertility doctor to come to dinner with them. And so he pretty much tells him to fuck off, and justifiably so. And
His mother and her husband also have a tendency to share a bit too much about their sex lives.
right. And then we let's see, get to. I think then we get to the.
The therapist.
Well, we get to the first episode of his stomach problem coming out.
Oh, okay, yeah, we do, you're right.
He comes out, and he winds up killing the guy in that he's sharing the office with, and he sneaks back in, literally. And wakes up the next day to find, the news that his, cubicle, his cubie, his,
QB.
yeah, somebody tried doing that too.
Oh
It worked
God.
fine.
That
Yeah.
you've heard that IRL?
Yes, I
Oh
have.
God.
And and luckily I have not had to share a cube in a very long time, actually, even before this, even as a temp, which is really weird.
But the office, his QB is killed, and yeah, he sees it on the news.
Right, so he has to figure out what's going on, but they just I he nobody can really say. They think it's like a raccoon of some sort because it's just this small creature that just clawed him to death.
But before this, they were introduced. He met the shrink. He went to the shrink.
Oh, he went to the shrink before that. I thought he went to the shrink
Yeah,
after,
it was.
but.
But I have my notes. It's before the QB dies. And the shrink just turns out to be an annoying hippie.
Yes, who's you're right. He that's right, he went to the shrink before the stepfather. And
Okay, yeah.
I knew I wasn't gonna get the order right because they really do just kind of circle around with all of these different subplots at the same time. And right, the shrink is just kind of like, yeah, man, what are we do here? That's when oh, that's when it, no, he, I thought he escaped first, but he escapes again, and then they're waiting for him to come back, and that's when he gets
His
the fertility doctor.
polyp turns into a monster that comes out his ass.
Right.
And
It turns out that that polyp is the killer,
yeah.
and yeah.
So the first time it's when he's at home, it gets out and it kills his QB. Second time it comes out while he's talking to his shrink.
And goes and kills the fertility
Yeah.
doctor.
In a very trauma way.
Yes. Or make them die slowly. I don't
Yeah.
know. And then yeah, the kicker is he has to go back inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he has to go to an uncomfortable place.
You mean the back of a Volkswagen Beetle?
Oh, thank God. I was setting you up for that. I was so hoping you were
Botched the line
going
slightly, but yeah, it's been a minute.
So let's sum this disaster up here.
It's interesting, because my take on it is very different.
So let's see, they come, the job turns out that it's not just that he's firing people, it's that there are illegal things going on, and his boss is pretty much fucking everybody over, and then he finally weaponizes his anger at his boss, and in the middle of all that, after all this terrible stuff, his wife tells him, or girlfriend tells him, that she's pregnant after he just laid all this crazy stuff out to her, which is terrible timing. And so the therapist, of course, is trying to work this out of him, has him meet his father, brings the father in later for them to work it out.
The great
And
Stephen Root playing a horribly infuriating character.
yes. And I guess we could say hilarity ensues at this point.
And it starts, of course, with a trope, one of two tropes in the movie that need to die. It starts kind of toward the end of the movie and then circles back to the beginning.
Yeah.
We start at the climax and then it's all flashback, which is horribly fucking annoying and overdone.
Yeah.
But we get Toby Huss as the doctor. He's always great.
Oh, yeah.
Although Patrick Warburton played his boss, I think I might be over Patrick Warburton.
I was expecting more from him in this, honestly. Yeah. I mean, they had me at Patrick Warburton, and I was excited. I was just expecting more from him. I mean, I like the stare at QB when he, but other than that, he really didn't do anything but just, play a straight guy who is fucking everybody over.
And Ken Marino was already playing straight.
Exactly. You had two straight guys there, and yeah, that's pretty bad. But
And I
QB
will
is a
say,
good
I
guy.
mean, Marino kicked nail hit it out of the park. Yeah, I gotta commend him on his performance in this one. He nailed it because he was able to play straight with all of that other shit going on.
Right.
He played it all brilliantly. The dinner party scene, I know it was intended to push his stress level over the top, but it was practically unwatchable.
I mean, there are a lot of unwatchable parts to this movie, but are you talking about Camille Nanjiani?
He was the cast was solid.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
can't knock any of the cast members, except maybe Warburton, who I think was just underused.
I think so. Well, I think a lot of people are underused in this, but I think Warburton just kind of didn't do much with what he had.
The other trope that needs to die, which is how why the QB dies, he calls him and tells him the QB needed to find this file, and he was looking on Duncan's computer, and he accidentally deleted a folder that was very important.
Deletes a folder.
Every modern operating system has a fucking trash can, just exactly for that. I can see accidentally deleting something. It's in the trash can, so you can fix that.
I mean, there's deleting a file, maybe, but who deletes a fucking folder?
That too. And I will say that 15 minutes in, I was very tempted to tap. Which says a lot for this movie because it came back for me. I actually ended up really liking it.
Yeah.
One thing I in that first beginning, though, I'd say the first half hour was rough for me. I really didn't need the sound effects in the bathroom scenes.
Well, yeah, and that's really where the flaw of the movie is the movie itself, the story.
Because the concept is great. The performances are solid. The beginning, I think, just is too tropey and too bathroom humor heavy. You
Well,
know?
that's the problem with the movie, is the movie is a bathroom humor movie,
Yeah.
and I mean, this could wor have worked as a horror movie, but as a comedy, if you're like over the age of 12,
Well, it kind of transcended that for me because I really got into the metaphor.
Well, yeah,
I love the
and of
metaphor.
course, and that was just the terrible feeling at the beginning of, oh, haha, no stress, huh? But yeah, you can see the metaphor of the anger
As
consuming you and destroying.
someone who is prone to losing my temper when I get too stressed, and also prone to having gastrointestinal issues when I get too stressed, it spoke to me. I also, going back to the specifics of the story, I didn't want to laugh at the way Milo attacked the doctor in the dream, but I couldn't help it. Because he's doing a scope, an endoscope on Duncan, and he's looking for the polyp, which is now gone, and suddenly Milo just appears on the camera and growls, and somehow he pulls the doctor in and attacks him.
I mean, ATM is that's funny. You can't. I mean,
Yeah.
I'm going to stand against the bathroom humor, but ATM is just too good to face it.
You're not talking about
I'm not a
automated teller
monster.
machines.
I'm not dead or anything,
Yeah. I will say it did remind me when Milo was re-entering. It remind the first time anyway. Reminded me of the insect removal scene from Evolution.
Okay,
You
that's
know,
been a
I'd like some ice
while.
cream.
Yeah.
Did remind me of that a bit. I think after that, after basically after about the half out, the halfway mark, it gets a lot better. When he sees his father, I love that scene because his father is just despicable. And of course, he'd already his shrink had already told him to stop holding back his feelings, and so he starts going off on his father. Has to rush to his father's outhouse. Yeah, his father is all about living in the moment and ignoring anything that happened in the past. You know, basically
Right,
trying to
and
avoid any responsibility.
the swerve there is pretty obvious, I
Yeah.
thought, why
I
they
had a
weren't very
feeling it was going to
subtle.
happen, but I liked what they did with
Yeah.
it. But I
Yeah.
loved him in the outhouse. You know, Milo comes out and he has to talk Milo down because he doesn't want Milo to kill his father. Although, after the outhouse scene, of course, his shirt is, soiled. And he keeps the shirt on for the rest of the movie, for what was like 3 days, it seemed like.
Pretty much, yeah. And just like the people reacting as he's passing and stuff,
Yeah. The scene where he has to feed Milo the mouse. Was that a gerbiling reference?
I don't know. I thought that too. It's kind of a.
I think it was maybe a slight gerbiling reference. I did like this, like seeing him release Milo on Warburton's character, though, on his boss.
Yeah, well, it's a little weird. Like, okay, so I mean,
Having him
but
drop trow right in front of the elevator, yeah.
now I did like the shrink actually, or the actor playing the
Well, yeah.
shrink. Just this whole Dennis Hopper kind of thing, just wonderful, I thought.
I hated the character at first. He kind of grew on me. You know, because they were
Well.
playing with, you know, the cliche shrink tropes, and I kind of that annoyed me.
But then it wound up actually being like a mystical thing
Yeah,
anyway,
it worked.
and
They redeemed it.
he actually wound up helping.
Although he had a weapon in his office, he had this big spear when Milo came out. A shrink really shouldn't have a weapon in their office.
No. He had all sorts of weapons in there, actually. There were all sorts of blades, I think, on the wall, weren't
Okay, I
there?
didn't notice them. I only noticed the big spear he picked up when Milo showed up. Yeah, really bad place for weapons.
Right.
I did like Ralph and Milo fighting.
Oh, yeah.
I got a kick out of that.
The showdown.
Ralph is his father's monster. Again, another brilliant metaphor. He inherited this monster, this stress-related monster.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like that the Milo cam wasn't overused. Just a couple of times we get Milo's perspective.
Right.
Very, very Evil Dead. You know, the monster cam.
Yeah, I think
And
if this was
also,
just a straight up horror, this might have worked much better than a horror comedy.
another kind of scene I didn't want to laugh, but I couldn't resist chuckling, when Sarah finds Duncan's mother and stepfather's dungeon.
Right, to put that in the middle of like this scene that's supposed to be really tense where
Oh.
she's like for her life and just like, wait, what?
Yeah, I
Oh.
couldn't resist chuckling. Although tiki torches are pretty much ruined for me now. They show up at a party. His mother and stepfather are having a party, and Milo is going after the wife. Duncan shows up, sells her to go through the basement, and something is coming. You know, something's trying to get in the door, and all of the party guests grab these tiki torches. It's just a bad image these days.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, this was 13, though. This is
Yeah, this
before
is way
they
before.
appropriated. But, you know,
They're
as a
just
fan
ruined
of
for
the
me now.
luau, yeah, it's a shame.
And I
Someday we'll get
like
them back.
that after he intentionally let Milo out is when Milo became impossible to control.
Yeah.
He del he the time he gave into it got to be too much. I just, like I said, I love the metaphor of the film. That redeemed it a lot for me, and I really related to it. One little bit of trivia: Milo's eye blinks were the only thing done digitally. He was a puppet the entire time.
Nice.
It was
They
all
just used
practical.
CGI on the eyes, huh?
Yeah, that was that. I appreciate the practical effects.
I think one joke that did work, some of the severance package stuff, you know, the condoms.
Yeah, that, a lot of that went over my head because I've never worked in an office.
Like why would you give condoms as a
Oh,
severance?
that was all supposed to be a part of the severance package.
Yes,
Okay,
that was.
now I get those
On that
jokes, okay.
folder, he's handling, you know, there were all sorts of weird things. The only funny one, of course, was this big pack of condoms to like this middle-aged woman, I think, too.
Yeah. And there was some kind of offensive key ring. I didn't quite get that one.
Like, I'm not sure why this is here.
On to brains.
On the brains.
The metaphor sold saved it for me. I really love that part. I gotta go 4.5.
I mean, I think what they had here was pretty much a 30-minute South Park episode that they stretched into about an hour and a half. I mean, like I said, if this they go for a straight up horror with maybe a few chuckles here and there with the best jokes. Yeah, this probably would have worked a lot better. Actually, the funniest stuff was in the outtakes during the credits, where Kabeel Nanjiani is just like, "Oh, is that too far?" Kind of thing. They're like, kind of. I'm going three.
All right, and what have we learned?
We learned that there's people that like bathroom humor over the age of 10.
And I learned that I really need to be very careful about my stress level. That's it for Bad Milo. Until next time, when it'll be kicking off a 2020 trilogy. Yes, we're giving this horrible piece of shit year a trilogy.
I wonder if the movies will be any
They've got to be
as
better.
bad as what actually happened this
They've got to be
year.
better. And we're kicking it off with 2020 Texas Gladiators. Can't wait to see that one. The other two are pretty main. Well, then we got a Corman movie and then Pacific Rim. So it should be an interesting one. I've only seen Pacific Rim of the three, so.
I actually have a fantastic idea for a Planet of the Apes prequel. I know they've done them already, but my idea for it would be it's 2020, things have been so shitty, and we just say, why the fuck not? Apes, you guys just take this. We're done.
Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.